It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
I am worried about my self-confidence, Karl Rove. Thanks so much, Senator Ron Johnson, standing by. Rich Lowry, the National Review, to put this election 22 in perspective as we get set in 7 weeks to make a consequential decision on the House and the Senate, a lot of governorships. We have a lot going on today. 10:30, the president will be speaking at the UN. We're also watching what's happening at the border and all other developments. So before I get to the senator, who is now ahead in the latest poll to retain his seat for another 6 years in Wisconsin, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
And those who try to blackmail us with nuclear weapons should know that the prevailing winds can also blow in their direction. This is not a bluff.
Really? Vladimir Putin, President Biden to speak at the UN? What can we expect? Will he call out China? Walk away from evil Iran's deal? Lambaste Putin? Let's see. But his woke agenda at the Pentagon and exit from Afghanistan makes his presentation reek of weakness.
Number two.
The bases are energized. Democrats are energized on abortion. Republicans are energized on immigration, the economy. But it's the independents that are going to swing this midterm election. And they are much more economic focused than the bases of the individual parties.
And with the economy sucking wind and we're losing 15% on the stock exchange, you got to wonder if the American people want to change. 2022, where's trending and the role of the reeling economy on the November outcome as the Fed gets set to inflict more pain.
Number one.
It looks like he's sending migrants to Delaware. Do you have any comment or response to that, sir?
He should come visit. We have a beautiful shoreline.
Sarcastic. Sorry, Dems. DeSantis owns you and the president on this issue. He's bringing his show to your home, Mr. President, not the White House, your Delaware home. The border wars are blowing up in the Democrats' faces as they deserve exactly what's coming to them because they're ignoring it. And what DeSantis and Abbott have done is by taking these illegal immigrants, having them sign a paper and putting them in these cities that are non-border cities, they're bringing the problem to their doorstep, making them comment on it. Senator Ron Johnson joins us now with Homeland Security, Foreign Relations, as well as the budget. Senator, I think it's a brilliant move by DeSantis, even though the sheriff is looking into suing him from the area of Texas in which those people went on that plane to Martha's Vineyard.
Well, good morning, Brian. I agree with you. I think it was brilliant to highlight the hypocrisy of the Democrats. I think all these jurisdictions are sanctuary cities, aren't they?
Yeah, every one of them.
Welcoming immigrants. And again, this is a tiny fraction of what the governor's having to deal with. About 7,000 people per day are being encountered. About 3 million people since Biden took office have either been encountered, processed, and dispersed, or come into this country illegally as a known or unknown gotaway. That's a number larger than the population of 17 states. Where are they going? We don't know, but again, I think it's brilliant. These governors have been, sending some immigrants to some sanctuary cities, these Democratic strongholds that all claim to want to coexist and be welcoming, and they're freaking out. They can't handle it. Well, how are governors handling 7,000 people a day? How is CBP handling it? That's what's opening up the lanes for deadly drugs that last year killed 107,000 people in drug overdoses. So it's a crisis. I blame the Biden administration, that is the root cause, but also the media, the complicit and corrupt media that has covered this up and really required these governors to do something to highlight the problem so that maybe the administration will take this seriously. But, Brian, they won't even admit it's a problem. They say it's a challenge.
Listen to his explanation. Listen to his explanation yesterday. He said the problem is it's a new group that's coming to the border. Cut five.
Under your watch, Mr. President?
Because there are three countries that are there are fewer immigrants coming from Central America,
and from Mexico. This is a totally different circumstance. What's on my watch now is Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua.
That is not true. There's more coming, but they're coming the same way through the southern border of Mexico, through our southern border. So this is the new spin, Senator. Is that gonna sell to America?
No, the truth is they're coming because the Biden administration is inviting them in. Remember, every Democrat presidential candidate said that they were going to stop deportations and offer free health care. That's called an enormous incentive. And then, of course, the reality is once they get here, even though most of them don't qualify for asylum, they're still being let in, and their claims not being adjudicated for years, so they're going to stay here. That's the reality, and that's why millions are coming, and millions more will come unless we stop this.
Yeah, but for him to say, it doesn't matter. There's a way to apply for asylum. The first country you get to after you leave yours, that's where you apply. When it gets to the southern border, you get stopped. If you get to our southern border, you remain in Mexico. It was very simple, and finish the wall. But he's done none of it, but at least people are talking about it. Do you think this is going to come up in Wisconsin in your race?
Well, where we're seeing it is in the deadly drugs. You know, and I've obviously been talking about this on a national level for years. I've been talking about the human depredations, the human trafficking, the sex trafficking, the drug trafficking. But it's killing Wisconsinites. All these, you know, local sheriffs don't have to deal with meth labs anymore, because they got put out of business by the flow from Mexico. It's a lot cheaper to get the methamphetamine, and of course the fentanyl is what's really killing people. So you know, every state's a border state, Brian. So it should be an issue in every election.
So right now you're up by, I guess, the Real Clear average. You're up by less than one, but on the latest poll, you're up by 4 against Mandela Barnes. How do you explain the surge, despite the fact that money's pouring in against you?
Yeah, well, first of all, we're finally able to tell the truth about Mandela Barnes. Now, we're not getting help from the complicit media. You know, in a sane world with an unbiased media, none of these races would even be close.
He's for defunding the police, and he doesn't pay his taxes. Is that a fact?
Well, he hasn't in the past. You know, he's been delinquent on his taxes. But, Brian, he thinks the founding of America is awful. He implies that our national parks are racist. You know, he claims he doesn't want to defund the police, but he's on record and supported by, you know, all these groups that their primary function is to defund the police. So, again, he can't be honest with Wisconsinites about who he is, so he's in hiding. But what we've been able to do is finally tell the truth. But, unfortunately, we got to pay to get the truth out. So Ron Johnson for Senate.com, they spent over $70 million lying about me, assassinating my character, because that's all they've got, Brian. That's all the Democrats. They can't defend this record. The open borders, the 40-year high inflation, record gas prices, rising crime. So all they can do is lie. And, of course, Democrats have no problem lying. And they don't get called on it by the press, because the press is complicit and corrupt along with them.
Well, the thing is, you don't need the press to understand that your life is, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're really screwed. And it turns out if only 10% of the country is keeping a balance on their credit card, that's now up to 60%. Right now in this country. And there's even more. 61% of Americans say they're falling behind. Now, I didn't say anything about Democratic Republican. If that is your reality, you know that's a new reality. And now, if you're about to buy a home, the way to solve the problem with the economy and to control inflation, they say, is to up interest rates. So if you're about to buy a home or thinking about it, you're going to have to put it off, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, they're putting homeownership out of the reach of consumers. And again, this didn't just happen. This is caused by the out-of-control deficit spending, purposely driving up the cost of energy and gasoline. Brian, a dollar that you held at the start of the Biden administration is only worth 88.3 cents. If you were a senior on a fixed income, fortunate to have $100,000 in your savings account at the start of the Biden administration, it's now worth $88,300. The federal government, the Biden administration, basically stole $12,000 for you. And look at how expensive things are nowadays. So, no, this is something the press can't hide, is the fact that people can't fill up their grocery carts. The gas is still, you know, 60% higher than it was when Biden took office nationally. In Wisconsin, it's about double. what gas prices were. So the media can't cover for Biden from this standpoint, which is, I think, maybe one of the factors.
Let's look at the governor's race. I think Evers has been awful. I'm just fascinated that Whitmer is in the lead, and Evers has got a 2-point lead in the latest poll to, I think it's Tim Michaels. How do you explain that? The guy shut down the country, didn't stand up at Waukesha, didn't stand up to Black Lives Matter when they were destroying your cities. What's going on here?
Because both of our Democrat opponents are hiding. The press doesn't press them. They don't ask them tough questions. And so they basically get away with this. But, the Barnes-Evers administration had a goal of reducing our prison population by 50%. Brian, they've already reduced it by 15%. And you think they'd start with nonviolent criminals, right? No. Only 11% of the 884 people they let out, about 100 people were nonviolent. The other 784 violent criminals, including 44 child rapists, 270 criminals
Amazing.
Primarily committed or attempted murder. What one guy shot his wife, cut off her head, put it in a wood-burning stove. They let this guy out. I mean, they've let violent criminals out on the streets in a neighborhood in Wisconsin or maybe even near you because they're free.
Yeah,
and that's right. I was going to say, and Mandela Barnes says reducing the prison population is sexy. Well, no, it's dangerous.
No kidding. Well, watching that New York fall apart, Chicago especially, and Philadelphia just rip apart at the seams. I was in Memphis. They say it's their number one issue, and we've seen that horrific crime over in Memphis. So the President of the United States said this at a closed event at D.C., if the Republicans take the House and Senate, it's a different world. I'll be spending all my time with a veto pen. Is he right?
Well, if we can pass things through the Senate, what he'll probably be doing is spending a lot of his time answering the questions that the public has for him. As we're going to try and expose the truth, try and expose the corruption of the Biden administration, Department of Justice, the FBI, the federal health agencies. No, we need to stop his massive deficit spending. That's true. But again, I have a hard time thinking the Democrats are going to be passing too many pieces of Republican legislation, but we can stop their agenda.
So one thing is clear. You're on the Foreign Relations Committee. You care a lot and have experience in foreign relations. Tell me the impact of this statement, Cut 27.
After our interview, a White House official told us U.S. policy has not changed. Officially, the U.S. will not say whether American forces would defend Taiwan. But the commander-in-chief had a view of his own.
So unlike Ukraine, to be clear, sir, U.S. forces, U.S. men and women, would defend Taiwan in the event of a Chinese invasion.
Yes.
So who's right? Who's running this government? Is this a tough guy act? A good cop, bad cop? How do you make sense of this, Senator Johnson?
Well, I'd go back to what Obama's defense secretary said about President Biden, is that he's been wrong on every foreign policy issue for the last 40 years, and he's continuing his string. Our position toward Taiwan has always been one of ambiguity. We obviously want to support people that want to remain free. But at the same time, I think it's pretty dangerous to be, poking a stick in the eye of China, particularly as we've weakened our own military with all this wokeness.
That and the vaccine mandate.
And readiness. Precisely, yeah. Which, by the way, the pandemic's over. All these mandates should be canceled. Okay, there should no longer be vaccine mandates.
I agree with you.
Should have been.
Here's Jake Sullivan explaining his own president that hired him. Cut 28.
He was asked a question, a hypothetical question in this interview. He was asked a very similar question back in Tokyo in May. He gave a similar answer in Tokyo in May that he gave in the 60 Minutes interview. After that answer in Tokyo, someone said specifically to him, have you just announced a major policy change? And he said, no, I have not. I've answered a hypothetical question. I have not announced a policy change.
Does that explain it?
No. No.
Totally inadequate.
They're just mopping up. They're just mopping up for the boss who, unfortunately, is just, he's losing it. I mean, let's face him. He's not up to the task. We're America is in a very tenuous position right now. It just is. I mean, the radical left has taken over our government. They've got control of both houses of Congress. They've got the administration. They've driven America into a ditch. Their foot's on the accelerating pedal. They're driving it further in the ditch. That's why the November election is so important. We've got to stop them. They have to be stopped.
So, Senator, we see Herschel Walker moved up in Georgia. We'll see what Don Boldick can do in New Hampshire, because that's a vulnerable race there. There's a lot of optimism over in Colorado. Overall, though, you have Senator Mitch McConnell is picking and choosing who to back. He's not going to back Blake Masters. He says other money's coming in. I think he's thinking of Peter Thiel. Are you getting the backing in Wisconsin?
Absolutely. I really have been. I think the Republican Senatorial Committee has been great. They've been in early. Other groups have come in early. And now, again, now we have an opponent, and we have to pay to get the truth out about the opponent. But my opponent's a radical leftist. He's hiding from the press. So, I'm cautiously optimistic about my race, but I'm going to continue to run like I'm behind and can't take anything for granted. So, again, Ron Johnson from Senate.com, we've got to keep our foot on the accelerator here.
Well, you have 7 weeks left. Is there a debate on schedule?
Well, he's agreed to one debate. I'm happy to debate that we've accepted three. He's accepted one once mail-in ballots or absentee ballots have already been sent out. So, again, he just does not want to go in front of the people of Wisconsin and, tell them what he believes, what he truly believes. You know, he's running away from all his prior positions. We've got the audio. We've got the video. And again, the press just is not hounding him. They're not asking him the tough questions. They should.
And VP Harris is going to visit Wisconsin today. What will she find? What will you do? Will she ask to see you?
Well, I'm in D.C. What I hope is she'll actually listen to the pain their administration is causing Wisconsinites with the 40-year high inflation and high gas prices and rising crime. I hope she doesn't do what the president did and what Mandela Barnes has been doing it and just lie about me. Just lie about me. That's what they do.
I wouldn't put it past her. Thanks so much, Senator Ron Johnson. Best of luck. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform. And watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Here's one of the causes of it, though. We offshore too much of our production. We don't make enough things in America. We don't make masks. We don't make enough baby formula. We don't make semiconductors. We're shipping all these things from China and then paying shipping costs. One thing we can come together is what I say is a new economic patriotism. Make things in this country. It will long-term bring down inflation.
So they're talking about the struggles with the economy and that being the top issue for Republicans. Not that they have to manufacture it. It's no culture war. It's a war for your dollars and who's keeping them and who's getting paid with them. Who's quiet quitting and who's grinding it out and behind and their paycheck no longer adding up because of inflation. And Roka Hanna came on last night on the network and just said, that's one thing we can agree on. Start making things here. The question is, will you put pressure on the unions to come in at a good price point, which will make sense for a business owner to bring back cars and masks and who knows what other things to make manufacturing great again, but affordable. I mean, people don't go offshore because they love going to Mexico or China. They do it because the number's so overwhelmingly better, the maximized profit, and it's never been frowned upon until recently. But the Pentagon's been told, pull everything out. Apple and others have said, when it comes to high-tech equipment, look India, look Vietnam, and they're starting to make the moves. It's got to happen rapidly. Maybe both sides can agree on that.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The bases are energized. Democrats are energized on abortion. Republicans are energized on immigration, the economy. But it's the independents that are going to swing this midterm election. And they are much more economic focused than the bases of the individual parties. And look, inflation isn't going away. People have a very negative mood about the future of the country, economically speaking. Those are the voters that are going to make it or break these races. And they're tilting to the Republicans in the home stretch.
Right now. But according to the power, I guess, the power play on FoxNews.com, it looks like currently, as opposed to where we were in July, it looks like late September, three seats are now favored and leaning towards the Democrats. It doesn't mean the House is going to go to the Democrats. It means the if the election was today, the lead would be – the margin would be smaller. And as a toss-up in the Senate, which was not the case a few weeks ago, Rich Lowry joins us now, editor of a National Review. So what he was just saying about independents, are you under the belief that independents will sway this thing?
Yeah. We live in an era of base turnout, and people tend to forget they're still middle of the electorate. They're still persuadable people, and the independent vote still matters. Trump won independents in 16, lost them in 20. That made a huge difference. And it'll be the same thing in this midterm, which does not look like it's going to be the Republican blowout I would have expected 2 months ago. But I would still expect a normal kind of midterm where Republicans win 20, 25 House seats and a Senate seat or two, which is all they need. And it'll be largely, I think, because independents have been turned off by Biden and are, as was being said there, focused on the economy. And they're just not a good story to tell there. I mean, the latest indication of that was the answer on 60 Minutes, which he just doesn't have anything good to say. So he blows every response on that question.
It's amazing. Does anyone drill with him? I mean, does anyone say, listen, they're going to bring up inflation. This is what you should bring up. Instead, he wants to dismiss the fact that people think it's still high. Yeah. And even Scott Pelley said it's a 40-year high. He's like, I know. Yeah, I know, but it's only 8.3. So that was a little embarrassing.
It had gotten worse.
Yeah, and in practical terms, stuff like this I know you thrive on. The percent of Americans carrying a balance on their credit card in 2021, 10%, now 60%. The cost of living staying about even with the cost of or falling behind. They were asked, are you falling behind or staying even? 63% are falling behind, 30% staying about even, 5% going up faster. So I don't know where those 5% were, but I congratulate them. Groceries are up 15%. Two-thirds of adults say their income, as you know, is falling behind. Our overall national debt at $27 trillion was at $27 trillion when the president took office. It's now at $30 trillion. He's only been there 18 months. So these numbers, the American people are feeling, along with the interest rates and 15% decrease in the stock market. But it was Mar-a-Lago, and it was the Dobbs decision that was flooding the zone. Is it still?
No, much less so. You know, Mar-a-Lago is going on. We have a special master hearing yesterday, but it's just not as dominant. Abortion was taken off the front pages last week by the Operation Martha's Vineyard. You know, 50 migrants showing up in a Tony vacation spot was enough to turn the news cycle. And I just think the end of the day, yes, Democratic turnout is juiced up over Dobbs, and they've used Trump, I think, pretty effectively for their purposes. But still, it just they don't have anything to say on inflation and the economy that's compelling, and those are the top issues.
I guess so. When we talk about what's going on with immigration, Ron DeSantis and Governor Abbott together have made Americans pay attention. They're not paying attention to the whole story. They think Martha's Vineyard is the story. They think the vice president's house is the story. They think New York and Chicago is the story. The story is what's actually happening at the border. And along with fentanyl, along with the 76 terrorists they picked up trying to cross the border last month, Rich Lowry, right?
Yeah, so the estimate of our friends at the Center for Immigration Studies, 1.35 million new illegal immigrants residing in the United States since Biden was inaugurated. They have to go somewhere, and they've been going somewhere besides – they've obviously been inundating the border states, but not all of them have been staying there. DHS has been handing over, because it's overwhelmed, handing over these migrants to private groups that say, hey, where do you want to go, and here's the Greyhound bus, and just have someone wire the money for the ticket, and you're on your way. So what DeSantis and Abbott and Ducey, by the way, in Arizona, they're also doing it. I've been doing is just basically a version of the same thing. You know, they show up in greater numbers in one spot, you know, dozens rather than one or two. But there's no reason that it shouldn't – the burden shouldn't be shared across the country. And these migrants are choosing to go. You know, they don't get on the bus in Texas or Arizona. No one's compelling them to do that, coercing them to do that. It's because they want to go to New York. They know someone in the environment of New York City in the area. So they go. That's just how this pattern works. So you think these people are being used as pawns? Fine. Let's have fewer pawns on the playing board, which is very easy. You just reinstitute everything Trump was doing. and you drastically reduce the flow. Of course, that's not what Biden wants to do.
Well, he's blaming it on the communism. He says, well, that's a communist problem. No, that's communist problem has always been there. Enforce your southern border. I don't care who it is. Plus, we're getting Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, everyone through. Listen to the press secretary. One of the strongest we've ever had. We're so fortunate. Cut seven.
I don't have the specifics of who, where we got word from. I can tell you that we've been closely coordinating with the folks in Delaware, the officials in Delaware. What I can tell you that our heads up did not come from Governor DeSantis, because his only goal is, as he's made it really clear, is to create chaos and use immigrants fleeing communism as political pawns. So it's about creating political theater for him. It's not about getting to a solution.
And what he's saying is they got tipped off that these immigrants are going to be going to Delaware today. So your thought, this is going to be the new spin. Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba fleeing communism.
Yeah, so first of all, I do think a heads up is a good idea. That's the way Arizona does it. You know, ask them, you want to go to New York? Okay, get on this bus, and then tells folks in New York the other end, you know, 4 days expect this bus to come, which I think is a common sense approach. But these folks, by and large, you know, they're not walking from Cuba onto the southern border. They're already probably been in a Central American country where not as comfortable as the United States, not as much opportunity in the United States, but they're not being persecuted there. So that's the root of the problem. Is almost all these asylum claims are bogus. They know our system is overwhelmed. It makes no sense. You come, you just say, I'm claiming asylum. You're waived in the country, and no one will ever make you leave. So that was the whole point of Remain in Mexico. You make a claim of asylum, fine. Stay in Mexico. If your claim succeeds and you genuinely fear persecution back home, come on in. That's what the way it works. You know, you're now in the United States. But if your claim fails, as almost all of them do, 70-80% or whatever it is, you're not coming in and you're not staying, you're going home. And that's obviously the way it should work. I can't, you know, if that's ever been polled, I'm sure it has like 80% approval, but that's what they won't do. Because at the end of the day, they really don't think we have a right to exclude them. They think anyone who wants to come has a moral right to be here, and anyone who thinks otherwise is a hateful bigot.
Right. And we're over that. So far, there's been 78 FBI watch terrorists have shown up. In 2021, there was 15. In 2020, there was 3. In 2019, there was 0. So when you look at what's happening, those are the guys we get. Usually terrorists don't get caught. They're usually good at being elusive. That's why they're terrorists. That's why we had 9/11. I look at this headline. Politico is angry with a reporter at the border, and it's not Peter Ducey. In recent days, current and former White House administration officials expressed to West Wing Playbook that they're increasing frustration with on-air coverage, arguing there's an alarmist quality to it, designed to fuel political narratives rather than illuminate the people. And they named Bill Malusian as the problem. Meanwhile, the guy should be getting an award, and they look at him as a pain. Yeah.
Yeah. And what does he do? I don't want to it's been tremendous work, and I don't want to slight it in any way. But one way you can look at it is all he does is set up a camera, you know, Eagle Pass.
And a drone.
And you see them all coming over. And no one else would do that. You know, it's an enormous story. It's kind of easy to tell in that respect. He obviously does much more than that. But no one else would do it. And the one guy who is doing it, they want to shoot at. I mean, that tells you all you need to know.
And just so you know, when you do this, you get sources, and they look at us as the only ally. So the Border Patrol is giving them all the facts. And they're basically whistleblowers every day, providing information that the administration doesn't want out and doesn't put out, and they're wondering how he gets it. It's called being a reporter. They don't have an adversarial press. They don't have anybody pressing them to be better.
Right.
That makes them worse. It's like having a coach that says everything you say is great. You're never going to be the player you can be. But they don't care about that because they do so much that is so dicey. Couple of things have come out.
The dynamic you're hitting on is you own a story, and then people come to you because they know you own the story, and that's how good journalism works.
Right. The way I understood it, Governor DeSantis, now in Florida, according to the latest poll, is up 48-40 on President Trump. No word if he leads any other state. Is that significant to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's better than the alternative. There have been other polls, in my mind, there have been other polls that had DeSantis ahead in Florida, and the first time one popped, I looked back, and, you know, the last time Trump was behind anyone in Florida was, you know, sometime in 2015. So the national polls, though, Trump is still stomping DeSantis. I think this morning or yesterday was one had him up again like 52-19. So it's Trump has all the indications are has a really strong grip on the party, and maybe it's the polls are a little illusory, and people are saying that support him just as a function that we like him, we feel defensive of him, we hate his enemies, and push comes to shove, they'll want someone else. But just evidence of in front of our eyes is that he's in a real dominant position in 2024.
What's interesting is that Biden's approval, according to Morning Consult, is now at 46%. And I guess it's because they're looking at the things he passed. But if they look at the content of what he did, for one thing, the gun control, whether you like it or not, mm-hmm. was not generated from the White House. It was all the Senate. They wanted him not to get involved. He basically took the issue off the table, in my view. Number two is when the infrastructure bill was done, you got 15 senators. Not one thing did President Biden do except for almost blow it up by saying without Build Back Better, we don't pass it. And then on the CHIPS bill was pure party, was a simple majority. And that was under reconciliation, as was CHIPS bill did pass with the majority. They got some Republicans on there. And then reconciliation got us the mini Build Back Better. He's getting credit for all those.
Yeah, and gas prices, you know, look a little better, and but you're right. It's created succeeding is better than failing almost no matter what you're passing. But it's weird because you look at the polling of that climate bill, for instance, the mini Build Back Better, and I think it has like 36% approval in the last poll I said. So no one really likes it or thinks it's going to make a big difference. But the fact that you know it's not internal party chaos and you get to have a signing ceremony. Money, it does make people feel a little better about you. 46 in that morning consult poll feels high to me, but there's no doubt he's taken a step or two up.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution has Herschel Walker up on Raphael Warnock. By the last two polls, he's been leading. 6-7% is undecided still. How much is riding on that debate?
Well, I think a fair amount, and Herschel, you know, he's been playing the expectations game, I think, wisely. He's like, you know, I'm not a debater. He's probably going to wipe the floor with me. But he just needs to put in a credible performance. If he puts in a credible performance, I think the natural gravity there in Georgia is Kemp pulling Walker over the finish line, and especially in a year like this, and you've begun to see it in the polling. And so if he doesn't totally step on himself, and I hope they're doing a lot of prep, I think he's going to win down in Georgia.
That would be phenomenal. And you have a guy who grew up in rural Georgia with absolutely not 2 cents to rub together, whose both parents worked, and they all worked the farm. And what he ended up becoming, let alone as an athlete and a businessman, if he makes the next step as senator, that would mm-hmm. be a great story that Americans should embrace. The other one is Brian Kemp. If he goes and holds on to this lead over Stacey Abrams, he will not only validate his first win, he will destroy maybe forever, which they thought was a Democratic superstar. Don't you agree?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And she had to say on The View the other day, oh, I never denied that I lost that election, which, of course, is complete BS. And every national Democrat is still afraid to say that Stacey Abrams didn't win that race. And I have to say, Kemp is a hugely impressive politician, what he's done. He beat Abrams the first time. Then he had, you know, Trump shooting at him in a primary, won that. You know, how often does that happen? And then is going to beat her the second time and get probably, you know, on his coattails, get a senator elected. So he's an impressive guy.
Well, he did. And also, he was very bold on the pandemic. I think people appreciate that now more than ever, as was Governor DeSantis. Lastly, the president ended the pandemic yesterday. What does that do for vax mandates that have gotten people fired and suspended around the country?
I mean, you think it all would just disappear, rightly, but, you know, we're in this bizarre twilight zone where he says the pandemic's over, but his administration doesn't. And, you know, what does this mean for the legal standing of his student loan forgiveness, which is supposedly a pandemic measure? What does it do to Title 42 at the border, which is kind of the last support we have for some enforcement down there, which is a pandemic measure? So I think the kind of the lawyers and the policy people have to be nervous that he said that, but it's something that's true, and it's something that he should say, and all these mandates should disappear.
All right. Rich Lowry, we're going to go read National Review for sure now and get my subscription, and we'll just wait for the postman to show up with the issue. Thanks so much, Rich.
Thanks, Brian.
Well, I'm going to finish up with some calls. You got a lot to say. We're also monitoring events at the United Nations, 1-866-408-7669. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you are.
coming to you on a need-to-know basis because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I'd love to see Nikki Haley. I'd love to see Liz Cheney. I'd love to see
Nikki
Kristen
Haley, the chameleon.
Nikki Haley was an incredibly effective governor of South Carolina.
There's some of us that can be chameleons and decide not to embrace our ethnicity so that we can pass.
Sonny,
I don't think that's fair.
You go by a different name.
Yeah, that's some of the idiocy on The View. I'm reluctant to play it sometimes. We played it all day, though, this all morning. And that is Sonny Huston saying that Nikki Haley changed her name to be more Americanized. Bobby Jindal did that. I know Bobby named himself after Bobby Brady. You could have brought that up 6 years ago when he was governor and ran for president. But Nikki Haley, that's her middle name. So she uses it effectively. But if you think she's running from her Indian heritage, you didn't read her book. It's like four chapters about her childhood, how it shaped her. And then she marries a man that happens to be serving in the military, becomes a governor and a UN ambassador. So she's got domestic and international experience and respect. So just to do yourself a favor, just talk about what you know. It's always been an advantage of mine. Even if people disagree with you, at least you could say I read it and researched it. Some of you are writing me at BrianKilmeade.com. I appreciate it. Richard writes me and says, talking heads have reported about the border leaders are busing immigrants. And notice they didn't use the term illegal. Anyway, they're busing them wherever they want to go. Are they kidding? They're busing illegal immigrants. Yeah, they're busing illegal immigrants and illegal aliens, and they're actually getting to go to some great places. If you are at the border, stuck in a small town in Texas that doesn't want you, and someone says, how would you like to hop on a bus and go to New York and Chicago? You're probably going to go. Martha's Vineyard on a plane? Sign me up. Gary, listening in North Carolina. Hey, Gary.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Say, if something's bothered me, and I haven't really heard this brought up a lot, you've got these millions of illegal aliens coming across the border. Now, obviously, they don't have any IDs or anything like that. The average American in this country has to have an ID to get basic utilities, power, and so on, to drive a car. And you have to be vetted to have any kind of a rental. Where exactly are these people going? Because it's virtually impossible, Brian, for anybody of this many people to have a sponsor in this country.
Impossible. You're right. That's where the outrage is, Gary. And I hope you vote that way. The only way they'll end it is get Republicans in charge of it who will do everything to treat the people with respect but set up a system. Because we have 11 million open jobs and some of these people are great people.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Always like to have Ken Burns on. He's joined by his co-director, Lynn Novick, at the bottom of the hour, The U.S. and the Holocaust, a new three-part, six-hour series, as well as Matthew Kronig is standing by to bring us the latest around the country, around the globe. And our main focus, we wake up to finding out that Vladimir Putin, that despicable character, the Hitler/Stalin of our day, is now threatening nuclear war because he's doing so poorly out in the field and is humiliated in every sense of the word, and should be, about the unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. So before I get to Matt, let's get to our big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
And those who try to blackmail us with nuclear weapons should know that the prevailing winds can also blow in their direction. This is not a bluff.
Really? Usually when people say it's a bluff. President Biden to speak at the United Nations in 25 minutes. What can we expect? Will he call out China? Will he finally walk away from the evil Iranian deal? Will he lambaste Vladimir Putin? Let's see. But the problem is the woke agenda at the Pentagon and exit from Afghanistan has his presentation reeking of weakness.
Number two.
The bases are energized. Democrats are energized on abortion. Republicans are energized on immigration, the economy. But it's the independents that are going to swing this midterm election. Mm-hmm. And they are much more economic focused than the bases of the individual parties.
Well, that's if that is true, it's bad news for the Democrats. Meanwhile, that's 2022. Where it's trending, the role of the reeling economy, as you just heard, on the November outcome, and the Fed to get involved today, set to inflict more pain.
Number one.
It looks like he's sending migrants to Delaware. Do you have any comment or response to that, sir?
He should come visit. We have a beautiful shoreline.
So funny, isn't he? Sorry, Dems. DeSantis owns you and this issue. And, Mr. President, he's bringing his show to your home. Not the White House, the other place where you spend all your time, that Delaware house of yours. The border wars are blowing up in the Dems' faces, and they deserve exactly what they have coming to them. Why? Because they let it happen. The press, compliant as it is, ignored it. Not anymore. Matthew Kronick joins us now, Director of Studies at the Atlantic Council, Acting Director of the Council's Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security, and the Director of the Scowcroft Center, Scowcroft Strategy Initiative. Matt, welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be on.
So, Matt, what do you expect the president to say? What would you include content-wise in his speech today?
Well, I think he'll likely focus on the big international security challenges the United States faces. I think probably number one will be the war in Ukraine and U.S. efforts there. Second, likely competition with China. And then I think third, the Iran nuclear negotiations. So I expect those to be the major items in the speech.
Does it change anything with the threat of nuclear war?
Well, you know, Putin has been making these nuclear threats since February, and he's talking a big game, but he hasn't followed through yet. And so I think what this shows is that he's deterred. As you said at the outset, he's running out of options. He's losing the war. And so this speech shows that he's reaching for the few remaining options he has left, calling up these reservists, lower quality forces. So that's not a great option. And again, relying on these nuclear threats. So I think the takeaway is the United States and Western governments should continue to support the Ukrainians and Putin's in a desperate situation.
Here is Vladimir Putin yesterday from Moscow, losing about, they say, 3,000 square miles, maybe more, and making some progress in the south in Kherson. Here's Vladimir Putin announcing the partial military mobilization in a war he says he's not fighting. Cut one.
I think it is necessary to support the proposal of the Ministry of Defense and the General Staff to conduct a partial mobilization in Russia. I repeat, we are only talking about a partial mobilization.
Right. Meanwhile, we do know he's looking to annex areas of the Donbass, which he says is important. When they have that phony vote and they announce they want to be part of Russia, which is a farce, then he says, I'll be obligated to protect that area. And he hopes to get public support behind him. I know it's hard to get inside his diabolical mind, but what is he up to? What cards does he still have to play?
Yeah, well, I think he is running out of options. This Ukrainian counteroffensive caught him by surprise. And so he's looking at remaining tools. You know, his conventional military has really been chewed up. And so he's turning to these reservists. They're lower quality personnel. He had really hoped to avoid this because it undermines his statement that this is a special military operation, a limited operation. He's worried that the Russian population could turn against him if this becomes a bigger war. So he wanted to avoid this, but here we are. Second, he's relying on nuclear threats. Again, the conventional military is chewed up, but he still has nuclear. And then these referenda, I think, are meant to show progress, hold these sham elections, claim that these Ukrainian territories he's occupying actually want to be part of Russia. And I think that helps him with a domestic audience. But I think he hopes will also help maybe deter the Ukrainians and be cautious as they go into these areas. Because Putin could claim, oh, you're attacking Russia now. This is getting serious. You need to back off.
So how do you do this, Matt? We have allies, and the allies are coming up with maybe a tenth of the arms they should be supplying to Ukraine. At the same time, India, technically an ally, is one of the best customers that Russia has with their oil. So how do you go in there behind closed doors and say, what the hell are you doing? I mean, this is not the time to acquiesce. Can you get stuff like that done today?
Well, I'd make a few points. One, I think it is in the U.S. national interest to defeat Russia, so the United States still has an interest to help Ukraine.
Sure.
But you're also right. The Europeans should be doing much more. They have done more than was expected, but there's more they can do. And I think behind closed doors is the way to do it and say, come on, guys, you've got to step up. This is in your backyard. And keep working on that. You know, the Indians, I think, caught many in Washington by surprise. We see India as a partner in dealing with China in Asia. They're the largest democracy on earth. I think the hope was that they would be on the side of the free world in responding to this Russian invasion of Ukraine. Instead, they see it as an opportunity to buy cheap Russian oil. So this is going to be harder to deal with. And I do think it's notable that we have this kind of new non-aligned movement. India, Indonesia, South Africa, Brazil, other major powers in the global south seem to want to stay out of this conflict.
And be a customer. Matthew Koenig, our guest, Director of Studies at Atlantic Council. Matthew, when we look at what India is doing, we have leverage. Well, they fear this. Russia at least provides arms to them. They're worried about China. They need us economically and elsewhere. They're worried about China. And that provides a little bit hedge on China. And this way they get cheap oil in a challenging economic environment. As we look in Central and South America, it seems to be going socialist, and we don't seem to be doing anything. We're watching China infiltrate. Russia has a role in Venezuela. Why are we letting Nicaragua, now Colombia, we know that Venezuela and Cuba, all these socialist/communist countries are taking root, and now there's a fear of losing Brazil. Should we be doing more?
Yes, we should. And I think the way we got here is, I think for good reason, we've focused on Europe, Asia, the Middle East as the most important geostrategic regions for the United States. But it's also meant that we've taken our eye off the global south, Latin America, Africa, Southeast Asia, and the Pacific. And so Russia and China have seen an opportunity to move in. And I think what got a lot of people's attention was this big deal the Chinese signed with the Solomon Islands in the Pacific this summer that will maybe allow China to open a naval base. So I think Washington has woken up to this problem and is thinking about ways to respond, but we're just in the early stages, and I don't think we have a good strategy right now.
I don't think we have any. I think we're totally, and then with the president says, well, I had no idea that communism was in Nicaragua and Venezuela, and now they're coming to our border. Really? I mean, can we just get them a globe? I mean, that would certainly help. We could just color in the areas that have gone red. Are you worried about Brazil?
I am. You know, the Americas are United States backyard. You can go back to the Monroe Doctrine we don't want foreign powers messing around in Latin America. And you're absolutely right that the trend lines are not at all good. Russia, China are gaining influence. So I think there are things we can do. You know, part of the reason they're gaining influence is through Belt and Road Initiative and these other efforts to provide loans for bridges and ports and things like that. You know, the United States has the most dynamic private sector in the world, and so the U.S. government isn't going to be providing major loans like that. But I think we can incentivize the private sector to look for investments in those regions to at least give those countries a choice. If they want outside investment, they don't have to go to the Chinese Communist Party. They can look to the U.S. private sector.
I mean, look, we know how productive the Hispanic community has been, Central and South Americans providing a lot of the manual labor in our country. And there's more opportunity here. Obviously, the perfect move would be moving manufacturing the best we can into Central and South America. It would be closer and will allow these provide additional opportunities for Central and South American countries and out of the Far East, obviously, as much as we can get out of China. The president said this on 60 Minutes. I wanted to get your take. Cut 26.
What should Chinese President Xi know about your commitment to Taiwan?
We agree with what we signed on to a long time ago, and that there's a one China policy, and Taiwan makes their own judgments about their independence. We are not moving. We're not encouraging their being independent. We're not. That's their decision.
But would U.S. forces defend the island?
Yes, if in fact there was an unprecedented attack.
Were you surprised at that? And how can they continue to say there's no change in policy when the president has said three times we would attack if they attack?
Well, I was and wasn't surprised. I think it was actually the fourth time now that
okay,
Biden has
my
said
bad.
That. So, well, yeah, it's hard to keep track as we keep doing this. So I think that Biden's statement was the right policy. My worry is that, like Putin, who miscalculated in Ukraine, Xi could miscalculate, think that attacking Taiwan would be easy. And we want to deter that invasion. We want to say, no, this is going to be hard. This could be war with the United States. Don't think about it. So I think the president made the right statement. The problem is then his White House contradicted him for the fourth time. And so that doesn't really strengthen the message. And then the other problem is we're talking a big game now, but we're not really building the military to back it up. We don't really have the ability to defend Taiwan right now. This is the Pentagon's biggest priority. But if you take into account inflation, the Biden Pentagon is actually cutting defense spending. So I like the talk, but we need to carry a big stick to back it up.
Right. I just do think that with recruiting being down, don't you think it might be an important time to lift that vax mandate and stop kicking people out?
Definitely. We need to be recruiting people into the armed forces, not kicking them out for these questionable scientific reasons.
I'm embarrassed to ask you such simple questions, but it seems so obvious from my point of view. It's like not even – we used to talk about the nuances of policy, but either they're doing the good guy, bad guy, good cop, bad cop thing, which doesn't make any sense with China. I'm not sure because it puts them in an awkward spot. Jake Sullivan did not look comfortable yesterday trying to explain away his boss. And then with the whole recruiting thing, does anyone else concerned about that? Shouldn't the person in the White House be concerned about our defense? Isn't that his primary responsibility?
Yeah, absolutely. They should be concerned. And, military leaders have been warning about this for some time, that we, for health reasons and obesity and other reasons, we're having a hard time recruiting enough fit young men for the forces. The Army has faced a deficit in recruiting for several years. And so, yes, we need to be doing what we can to get the best people in and not let things like a vaccine mandate stand in the way.
So, Matthew, what kind of things are you doing at the Scowcroft Center?
Well, we focus on global strategy and security and honoring the legacy of General Brent Scowcroft, who was National Security Advisor to Presidents and Ford. And so right now, our biggest priority is competition with China. We think that is the biggest threat to the United States. And it's a comprehensive threat. It's not just military. It's economic. It's ideological. It's technological. And so we're trying to develop the strategies and the policies right. The United States and its allies can put in place to deal with this threat.
Last question. Is Ukraine capable of defending against an additional 300,000 Russian troops?
I think so. You know, these are going to be lower quality forces. And here's another place where the White House could be doing better. We're wringing our hands about providing Ukraine with more advanced weapons because we're worried about Russian escalation. I think we should instead be giving the Ukrainians the weapons they need, including these longer range ATACMS missiles. That's what they're asking for. We have them, but we're being self-deterred. We should stop that. We should help Ukraine win this war.
And help them get tanks and maybe planes. Matthew Kronick, thanks so much, Matt.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You got it. When we come back, I'll take some calls, and we're waiting on the president speaking about 15 minutes. More into the content than the delivery. And then we have Ken Burns and Lynn Novick coming on talking about the U.S. and the Holocaust. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
A radio show of the people for the people. You're with Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think at some point you're going to have to embrace the fact that this is happening to a certain extent. I would say, look, you've got people that want to work, and you've got a shortage of workers. Hire these folks, give them the opportunity to work legally, and then make sure that the employers that are employing them are doing it the right way and paying them correctly. And then here's the catch. Tax them on it.
Yeah, I understand the sentiment, but it's not going to work because it's all about symbolism. What did Henry Cuellar say, and what did Jay Johnson echo over the weekend? People in Central and South America, wherever they're coming from, need to see people going home, being rejected. They need to know that the border is not open. You got to keep showing them with video. The administration keeps saying, we send 100,000 home. You know, we keep sending about tens of thousands every day back. All right, let's see that. Why do we never see that? Not that I don't trust them, but even if I did trust them, you need to see it because they need to see it. Right now, they're seeing a greeting party at Port Authority. Everyone hugging them in Martha's Vineyard. You got to be kidding me. They're all getting in and coming across in the Rio Grande Valley. Eagle Pass. And that means, honey, we should go. We could get in. You saw the video. That's the danger. And that sheriff's an embarrassment. He's the sheriff in Bear County. He thinks Governor DeSantis is the problem. He's not. Don in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Don.
Yes, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to test your memory. Do you remember the Mariel Boatlet from back in the 80s?
Yep.
Okay.
All criminals.
Yes. Do you think there's a parallel between that and Venezuela emptying out their prisons and sending them to the United States?
Wouldn't be hard to find out. I mean, that they're not sending their best, right?
Right. We both were Democratic presidents. We've got high inflation right now. And also we've got higher rising interest rates. So it's really easy to see that, you know, these two presidents seem to be on the same path.
Well, a couple of things. They should be applying for citizenship here or admission here in Colombia. The first country they step into, they go to the consulate and they say, hi, I'm such and such, and this is my background check. Here's my social, here's my numbers, whatever they are. Check it out. I'd like to apply for asylum. I have a crazy Maduro as my leader. I don't want to be a communist. I grew up in capitalism. You know that. We love America. Okay, let me just check you out, and then let's see where you look on the asylum list. I'm all for bringing more people into this country. Never against it. I just want to find out if they want to be here. And if they're looking to work or they're looking to live off our system. And that's so easy to find out. It's all built into it. But when you just storm the border, you already lost me. You lost me at that. Ken Burns next.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We tell ourselves stories as a nation. One of the stories we tell ourselves is that we're a land of immigrants. But in moments of crisis, it becomes very hard for us to live up to those stories.
The Holocaust was beyond belief. People just disappeared.
The primary goal was to get to the United States.
But the golden door was not wide open.
We are challenged as Americans to think about what we would have done, what we could have done, what we should have done.
In our better moments, we are very good people, but that's not all there is to this story.
And it is a valuable story. It's always worth looking back. There's so much footage available that no one would ever see, but Ken Burns and Lynn Novick dig it up. They're co-directors and producer of The U.S. and the Holocaust, a new three-part, six-hour series that explores America's response to one of the greatest humanitarian crises of the 20th century. Welcome to both of you. Thanks to Ken. Well, hello, Lynn.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Brian. It's great to be with you.
Always. Ken, so first off, to both of you, if you take this question, how did you get onto this topic? Where did you think this is unexplored? I got to expose it.
Yeah, well, you know, remember when we made our film, Lynn and I made our film on World War II that came out in 2007, you and I talked about it.
Yep.
We'd done a pretty significant scene on the Holocaust, but people came out of the woodworks with a lot of sort of misinformation and disinformation, kind of conspiracy theories and questions like, why didn't you do this? And, you know, statements that this person was anti-Semitic. And we realized this is a story to tell. And then later I worked on a film about the Roosevelts with our writer, Jeff Ward, who had written both those pieces and now this one. And finally, we were approached in 2015 by the Holocaust Museum in Washington that was going to do an exhibition along the same lines and thought, wouldn't it be nice if we could work in cooperation? And their exhibition opened in 2018. We spent 7 years working on this. And it was really trying to sort of dig deeper into the U.S. and the Holocaust, not just what happened in the Holocaust, but we, who are not responsible for it or complicit in any way, what we did, as you heard in that teaser, what we did and what we didn't do, perhaps what we should have done. And, you know, though the United States let in 225,000 refugees more than any other sovereign nation, we could have let in five times as many at least, even within the pernicious quota systems that existed with Johnson Reed immigration law, and we didn't. And so I think in some ways we have to reckon with a complicated history. It also permitted us to re-see the Holocaust not as some separate event within or attached to or adjacent to World War II, but something that's very much part of the TikTok of it, what happened. And you can see it in relationship to German expansion. So we just wanted to revisit it and tell a complicated story. It's also filled with lots of American heroes.
And Lynn, it's so typical because the water isn't blazing hot. It gradually gets hot. Hey, what's going on with Hitler? Oh, he says he's not going to be a problem. Oh, they want to just expand a little bit. Oh, they just want to restore their economy. Oh, wait a second. They're belligerent against the Jews, but maybe they won't expand. And the Russians are the issue. And then little by little, it's easy to say, why didn't we act sooner? But when you realize the headlines were covering it, they were doing it, they did fear it, but they worried about another world war. Lynn, first off, I want you to hear one of the cuts from your documentary. This is the State Department and why they didn't do more to help Jews fleeing Nazi Germany. Cut 38.
The Nazis persecuted the Jews was undeniable, but the notion that the Nazis were now preparing to kill them all was simply impossible for many in the State Department to believe.
State Department officials decide that this is not good information. And this is crucial. They say, even if this were true, there's nothing that we could do about it. They believe that they are doing all they can to assist the Jews and that any sort of rally or petition or protest asking them to do more would be diverting resources from the war effort. Many of these people were also racist and anti-Semitic and nativist. And so you have to wonder whether some of their concerns, some of their annoyances have to do with the fact that they're being asked to help Jews.
Your thoughts on that, Lynn?
Yeah, so that was the voice of Rebecca Erbelding, a wonderful historian at the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, who really helps us understand some of the complexities of the situation that our leaders and the people in the State Department and the people in the media and just the American people found themselves in. Because as you said, Brian, you know, this was a gradual escalation of a problem. And as it was happening, even while it was happening, sometimes the people to whom it was happening couldn't believe what they were experiencing and the scale of what was being visited upon the Jews of Europe. So there's multiple different problems here. One is understanding what's going on as it's changing. Two is, what do we do about it? And that these are difficult problems. And I think in the film, we just tried to show as much as possible, not to judge with 2020 hindsight, but to represent the complexities of the situations that the American people and our government found themselves in, and also the ways in which our response could have been better. And the State Department is the place where people applied for visas to come here because of the quota system Ken was describing. And they sort of went out of their way to make it harder as opposed to making it easier. And there are many reasons for that, some of which Rebecca Erbelding just explained in her beautiful.
Hey, Ken, I haven't watched all of it, but in looking at it, I think Eleanor's instincts were better than FDR's. It was just the nature of his position.
I think it's just a great question, Brian. It's the nature of his position. Remember, he's not a king. He's not a Führer. He can't wave a wand and say, oh, let these people in. This has been voted by Congress. It's an act. The American people overwhelmingly support it. There's a kind of toxic environment of othering people and blaming, particularly the Jews. There's lots of anti-Semitism sort of in the air. And so he's moving as a strategic politician who sees better than anyone the coming war and realizes he has to sort of revoke the Neutrality Act quietly. And while in retrospect, the humanitarian stuff seems foremost, but that's just in retrospect. If he hadn't revoked the Neutrality Act, we might be speaking German today. No kidding. But you're right about Eleanor. You know, with the exception of Prohibition, and her father was a hopeless alcoholic, and she watched him die in the most horrible throes of the mental illness of alcoholism. She's basically right on everything. So he has constantly got, you know, somebody at his shoulder, in his ear, telling him what's right. And he, I think, for the most part, believes it, but sometimes his actions seem to us sort of frustratingly cold because you want him to do something more. And I think perhaps he could have done more, shouted more loudly, but for the most part, he has got, I won't say bigger fish to fry. There's nothing more important than the Holocaust in this regard, but he does have the greatest cataclysm in human history, the Second World War, to manage, which will kill in its totality, you know, more than 50 million human beings.
So, Lynn, just to set the stage, and you do it great. And by the way, you can get this on the app. I get it on the app, PBS.org, PBS video app, or just PBS. You can get an iOS, Android, Roku, Apple TV, everything. And it is called The U.S. and the Holocaust. We're not ready to fight. We got 139,000 troops in a country this size. It's stunning. Our equipment's from World War One. We have almost no, we have no infrastructure. So with the Neutrality Act, it allows us to build planes and tanks for Europe to fight, for the UK, the United Kingdom, and for France to fight. Little did we know they wouldn't. But at least we were able to ramp up a little before we directly got involved. I want you to comment on this. This is the Auschwitz report, and it's so horrific, we can't get our head around it. Cut 40.
The release of the Auschwitz report is headline news throughout the country. These news reports explaining to the American people what Auschwitz was and what happened there are followed up by op-eds, by columns about Auschwitz and what America has to do in the wake of all of this information.
And the fact that it's released by the War Refugee Board. It's not being released by a Jewish organization. It's not being released. Rabbi Stephen Wise says it's coming from a governmental source. It's much harder to dismiss it.
Did we?
No, no. By that point, the Auschwitz report was a very important document that included eyewitness testimony of two people who had escaped from Auschwitz and written a report that really verified what was going on there. There had been other reports before this, but this was in April of 1944. The government released this definitive report describing the gas chambers, the executions, the deportations, the whole scope and scale of what was happening at Auschwitz in the larger context of the destruction of European Jewry by the Nazis. And it was front page news all over the country, all over the world. We didn't dismiss it. The question then is what to do about it. This is April of 1944. This is before D-Day. You know, we do have soldiers fighting in, on the European continent, but we're nowhere near anywhere of the places where this killing is happening. And is this the highest priority? The highest priority is to win the war, as Ken was saying. Roosevelt has by now obviously mobilized. We've built the armies. We've got this, you know, we've gone overseas to fight the Nazis and to fight in the Pacific as well. But this is coming out in the context of really the middle of World War II.
So, you know, we killed,
and it wasn't dismissed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we didn't act the way we should in retrospect. Yeah.
One little fine point, Brian, I would just add to that, what Lynn said is absolutely true, is that by the time we get a boot on the ground in Europe, in Sicily, three quarters of the people who are going to perish in the Holocaust have already been murdered, right? They're in Poland. Like, we think concentration camps, the gas chambers are in the killing centers in Poland, in Nazi-occupied Poland. And they are, you know, hidden out of sight, and they're Auschwitz, they're Chelmno, they're Belzec, there's Sobibor, there's Majdanek. I mean, these are the horrible places. People are dying in concentration camps. They're being worked to death, and they're being burned in crematoria. But these places are designed purely to kill human beings and work them to death,
right,
those that aren't immediately killed. And that, you know, we're not even yet at a place where we've got an air base to go and conceivably disrupt, if we could.
Right.
The
Okay. I think Ken's still there. By the way, the voiceover is the best in the business. Peter Coyote, I guess he works for you guys. He's unbelievable. Every time he talks, you just want to pay attention. Ken Burns, Lynn Novick, our guest. What I think is so important about what you do, you put it in perspective. You bring us back to the time rather than judge us from the eyes of 2022. I never thought when we first started doing interviews about your project from the Civil War on down, Ken, and I love doing it, we'd have to remind people that history is history for a reason. You can't judge them against today's mores and to what we believe today. And believe it or not, I think Bill Maher nailed it when he talked about this current war on history. Cut 41.
How we teach our kids history has become a big controversy these days, with liberals accusing conservatives of wanting to whitewash the past. And sometimes that's true. Sometimes they do. But plenty of liberals also want to abuse history to control the present. And last month, a scholar named James Sweet caught hell for calling them out for doing just that. He criticized a phenomenon known as presentism, which means judging everyone in the past by the standards of the present. It's the belief that people who lived 100 or 500 or 1,000 years ago really should have known better. Which is so stupid. It's like getting mad at yourself for not knowing what you know now when you were 10.
In a funny, comedic way, he's always smart, even though you don't agree with him. Isn't that what people that care about history are battling today? That people want to take down statues and ruin and wreck museums? Is that what you're battling today?
No, I think it's a more complicated and nuanced thing, Brian. And I think we need to hold all of ourselves to a higher standard. The assaults we're being, it's a pincer movement from both sides. And what we have to do is liberate ourselves and tell a very complete and honest history that's unafraid of controversy or tragedy, but equally drawn to those stories and moments that suggest an abiding faith in the human spirit, and particularly the unique role this remarkable, but also, as our film shows, dysfunctional republic plays in the positive progress of mankind. People want to sanitize and make a Madison Avenue view and not upset people with anything that's disturbing, and people on the other side want to use history as a kind of weapon to sort of do this. Both are not right. We're interested in telling stories, and stories about human beings are always complex and not easily fit in. There is venality and virtue. There is greed and generosity. There is puritanism and purient. And it's not just necessarily between people, but within people. And if you can adopt a thing where you're telling a story and not making an argument, because arguments don't change people's minds, stories do, then you have the possibility of finding a common space where you and I and your listeners and the PBS listeners, which overlap tremendously, can have a civil discourse, which is the whole purpose of history, to give us the perspective to look on this moment with a little bit of grace and understanding and civility.
But I always think that you and Lynn are fearless in that way. And Lynn, I just want to, we only have a minute, 90 seconds left. But when they tell Teddy Roosevelt, get that statue away from the Museum of Natural History, when they say take Lincoln's name off that grammar school, rip the Andrew Jackson statue down from in front of the White House, that angers me and worries me. What about you?
Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I'm agreeing with Ken in the sense that we need to be able to look at ourselves critically and to understand where we have gone wrong and where we can do better. And we do have some very controversial aspects of our own history that we're still reckoning with to this day, and probably our children and grandchildren will also be having difficult conversations about uncomfortable truths in our past. And we should welcome that, you know, and I think the statues is a question, but there's bigger questions at stake here than that for us.
Right, Ken Burns, Lynn Novick, their new documentary, The U.S. and the Holocaust. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Brian.
All right.
Take care.
I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
You got it.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations. I know the magnitude of work that went into a project like this, and it's just in awe. Go to PBS. It's so worth it. When we come back, I'll take your calls. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is the same media that has bought every single thing that has been sold to them over the past 5 years. They're completely unquestioning about things, which is, of course, the real problem, because you cannot have a free republic without an informed public. These are the people we're relying on. But it really is amazing the way this stunt has managed to expose the Biden administration policies and expose the people that support it. You know, those 50 migrants landing in Martha's Vineyard, if they had been carrying rakes and mop buckets, they would have been welcomed in open arms, as they often are. But because they came as humans looking for asylum, these people couldn't have handle it. And the policies revealed themselves, and these people revealed themselves.
Charlie Heard just made sense of it. I mean, do you realize how embarrassed they should be? Do you ever meet somebody in your life that does something so embarrassing, and what makes it really worse is they don't realize it? I guess we all have done it to a degree, and we quickly correct, I hope. But Martha's Vineyard is totally not self-aware enough to know that when those illegal immigrants arrived in Martha's Vineyard, and when they signed forms that allowed it, they arrive in small-town paradise. I've been there a couple of times. It's awesome. they arrived there, and these people are horrified. They can't believe these Venezuelans and these other Hispanics are in their area, and they quickly, in 45, look, can I get you? We don't have an infrastructure. Let me get your blankets. Let me get you something else. Of course, there's plenty of room there. You could put them in a gym for a short term. You could bring them to the beach for a while, and then they could rotate and make sure they understand have proper sun protection. But instead, they call the National Guard, and 300 arrive, and they escort them to a military base.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. At the United Nations, they're running late, evidently. Joe Biden should have spoken already. Should have been probably done 10 minutes ago. He's supposed to address the whole world at 10:35, but hasn't this time. I don't think he's to blame. I think everybody else is talking long. With this hour, we're going to be joined by Martha McCallum and Bill Hemmer. Martha McCallum, fresh off her British Courage, great coverage. And Bill Hemmer is going to do some evaluating about what's happening domestically. With me in studio, now a familiar face to all of you, David Sokol, Chairman, CEO of, is it Teton Capital?
Teton Capital, yes, sir.
Teton Capital, Chairman of the Board of Atlas Corp and former Chairman, CEO of NetJets and former Berkshire Hathaway, and author of the book, Go Get It, American Perspective, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation. And before we get to David, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three, sponsored by Crunch Fitness. Interested in owning your own business in a growing $30 billion industry? Check out Crunch Fitness at crunch.com.
Number three.
And those who try to blackmail us with nuclear weapons should know that the prevailing winds can also blow in their direction. This is not a bluff.
Yeah, President Biden to speak at the UN today. What can we expect? Will he call out China, walk away from evil Iran, and lambaste Putin for that statement, which is ridiculous? NATO threatening nuclear weapons on Russia. Let's see if the woke agenda at the Pentagon, an exit from Afghanistan, will allow the president to appear as if he has some American strength.
Number two.
The bases are energized. Democrats are energized on abortion. Republicans are energized on immigration, the economy. But it's the independents that are going to swing this midterm election. And they are much more economic focused than the bases of the individual parties.
This is Josh Krasauer weighing in. 2022, where's it trending? And the role of the reeling economy on the November outcome. As you hear, it might be the key moment as we wait for the Fed to inflict more pain on the people.
Number one.
It looks like he's sending migrants to Delaware. Do you have any comment or response to that, sir?
He should come visit. We have a beautiful shoreline.
Hysterical. Sorry, Dems. DeSantis owns you and the issue. And Mr. President, he's bringing his show to your home, not the White House, to your Delaware home where you spend most of your time. The border wars are blowing up in the Democratic faces. And because it is a tragedy, not because it's a political cudgel to be used, it is actually broken and maybe done on purpose. David Sokol, welcome officially to the show.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate your having me.
First off, I know business is your expertise, and we're going to talk about the economy. Your take on what's going on with, because a lot of the people that you hang out with are the most successful, powerful people in the country. When you have illegal immigrants arriving at a place like, or migrants arriving at a place like Martha's Vineyard, and they show up there, does that drill the issue home to those who want to ignore it?
I think it does. I think it also lets America realize this isn't a joke. This is, you know, the president and the vice president seem to think it's kind of humorous that we have this situation or that somehow they may benefit from it.
76 people on the FBI terrorist wanted list have been found at the border so far this month.
Yeah, and those communities along the border, you know, how do they handle it? I mean, if a community like Martha's Vineyard that has an influx of over 100,000 guests during the peak periods, and during the off periods they have 17,000, they must have a lot of rooms there. But apparently, they don't view that those rooms are available for immigrants. But somehow they think that people live along the border should just open up their houses.
So they did a study. They're doing some studies now to find out who's got the power and what the issues that matter. And it turns out abortion's dropping, but the economy's rising, inflation taking a big bite out of the American budget. So far, so it's the highest I've seen. They say it's highest in 40 years. It's the most we're talking about it. It seems at least 20 years.
I think it's a huge issue. And frankly, we could be heading into, and I think we are at the beginning of, a period of stagflation globally, which is the most painful thing you can do to lower and middle income folks.
How would you define that?
High inflation and low GDP growth, basically a recession globally with high inflation. There's nothing more painful to the lower middle class.
And you think we're beginning to feel it?
We are. If you look at GDP projections globally, not just here in the U.S., but around the world, China particularly, we're definitely going into a slowdown. You're seeing it, you know, shipping rates in many cases, China to the West Coast of the United States down 90% in the last 12 months. Just in the last 3 months, China to Europe shipping rates down 60%.
How much is that the zero COVID policy and how much is that demand?
Most of it is the clearing up of past backlog that was caused by COVID, and now it's demand.
Here is the president on this very issue.
Your grocery bills. What can you do better and faster?
Well, first of all, let's put this in perspective. Inflation rate month to month is just an inch. Hardly at all.
You're not arguing that 8.3 is good news.
No, I'm not saying it is good news, but it was 8.2 or 8.2 before. I mean, it's not, I can make it sound like all of a sudden, my God, it went to 8.2%.
It's the highest inflation rate, Mr. President, in 40 years.
I got that. But guess what we are? We're in a position where for the last several months, it hasn't spiked. It has just barely, it's been basically even.
The president speaking right now is talking about Russia calling them out justifiably. But, David, your reaction to his evaluation?
Well, it's one of the problems we have with government today is they just say things that aren't true. They try to mislead the American public. I mean, 8.5% inflation for most Americans. They remember 50% of the population was born after 1983. For most, you know, I'm old enough to remember when Treasury bonds were over 10%. Most of the young people today don't know what inflation feels like. And so they try to downplay it by saying, oh, well, it's just the same as last month. It's 8.5%. That's a 40-year high.
Two-thirds of U.S. adults say their incomes are falling behind the cost of living. Groceries are up 15.8%. Gas is up 25%, even with its recent reduction. Rent up 7%. Airfares up 33%. See, if I am a president of the United States and I say, I'm working on a situation in Cuba, you're going to be surprised. Okay, I have to take your word on it. We're working with Europe on how to neutralize Russia. You'll see, okay, I have to take your word on it. But I'm not waiting for the president's cues to tell me how the economy is. I don't need anybody's advice on that. We all got to make our own evaluation. So when he says something you know is totally wrong, it really, you lose rapid credibility that might not come back.
Absolutely. And even for myself, where differences in energy prices aren't going to change my lifestyle. But when I pull my pickup into a gas station, and even today at $3.70 a gallon, it's $90 to fill up that tank, and it used to be $40. I just say to myself, wow, that's a huge difference. So for folks that have to find that extra $50 a week or every 5 days, you know, it's a huge impact on their lifestyle.
How did you grow up? Did you grow up did you grow working class, middle class? Did you
lower income? But you know, we weren't.
So you have a real understanding what it's like, paycheck to paycheck.
Absolutely. You know, my first house was a mobile home, you know, you make payments. You take your money, you put it in envelopes, and say, okay, I've got this much for utilities, I've got this much for food, I've got this much for gas, and when those envelopes are empty, they're empty. And that's what Americans are dealing with today, is their budgeting process is being completely blown out of proportion.
See, I am extremely lucky to have this job now, but up until like 33, beyond paycheck, my life was dramatically underfinanced. And not that I had to go out to eat every night or I have this nice car. I didn't. A Celica that was 7 years old and things to that nature. But I never minded it. I thought it was part of the process. You know, just go ahead, have evaluation. But when people or were haphazard or were indifferent about what's going on, that drives me crazy about this. And you have a situation where you have a politician who's been doing the same job for over 50 years. He's got no sense of going shopping. One time, George Bush, 41, didn't know how a price definer worked. One of those swipers worked, and everyone's like, "Oh, he's out of touch."
Is he getting a pass now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the mainstream media is just holding this guy up. And it's unfortunate because these are real issues. And not only is inflation issue, what he's speaking on right now, I mean, he has had to walk his own words back three times on whether we would defend Taiwan. He says yes. His State Department says no.
Over the course of a year and a half.
Right. And now we're dealing with a Putin threat of nuclear war. Does anybody in this country really believe that Joe Biden or Kamala Harris should be making this decision on war? I mean, it's frightening. But these are real issues. And I think this coming election, people have got to pay attention to America first.
Yeah, and we're pulling some of this speech because he opened up with Russia, right, Eric? So he opened up talking about Russia because Russia's going to do a fake referendum September 20th on the areas in which they just took in the Donbass region, which might not be able to hold too long. And one of the reasons he wants to do that is tell the Russian people we're being invaded on that land we just got. Meanwhile, he's going to have trouble holding on to it where he's conscripting or he's activating 300,000, I guess, reservists into action, which could blow up in his face. Here's what Lee Zeldin said about the president, who's on the Foreign Relations Committee and served in the military. He's also running for governor in New York. Cut four.
As a member of Congress, for me and for all of our colleagues, we should sit down in a classified setting with the U.S. Intelligence Committee community to find out what they know. I would treat this seriously before anything else. And when President Biden gets to the United Nations, understanding that Vladimir Putin is known to be homicidal, not suicidal.
And here's the key where it leads to your expertise is energy. So everyone fears the fall in the winter because he's cutting off natural gas. He wants to have Nord Stream 2 actually pushed over to China. What he's doing long term is pulling us. He's losing his best customers forever if they have a brain in their heads. How worried should you be if you're in Western Europe right now?
I think you should be worried in Western Europe, and I think you should be worried in North America because part of what Putin's doing is using energy as a weapon. And when the West, including Europe and the U.S., are dumb enough to basically start shutting down fossil fuel availability, which is the lifeblood of our economy, in the hope that something's going to replace it, which, by the way, it's a hope, not a plan, those that are our adversaries recognize, how dangerous that is for our economy and how they can affect popular opinion and things of that nature. What they've done in Europe is a great example that Americans should be watching out for. Germany shut down their nuclear plants, shut down their coal plants, went to wind and solar, but did not have enough to back up their entire energy resources. They then tied themselves to Russian gas, and look what's happened. Now they're having a ration. Their prices are up 300% and 400% on energy. It's a weapon, and if we're dumb enough to provide that weapon to China or to Russia or to other adversaries, Iran and others, we're going to pay a huge price for it.
This is my hope, because you know what's happening in California. They kept the nuclear plant open. Do you know what they're doing in Germany? They're reopening their coal plants and the nuclear plants.
Right.
I don't know if they can get it open in time. So they're going to be burning the fossil fuels they ran from and thought they were put it behind us. They can't in all practicality. And you can only have windmills for one season before the people rebel. And when they can't get heat and they can't get air conditioning, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, Republican, or a socialist or a non-socialist. I'm voting for the people that are going to let me go back to my life, correct?
Well, hopefully. But what I think part of what the folks that want to hurt America are thinking is that they can destabilize us. And they're right. I mean, you shoot energy prices up to oil for $150 a barrel, natural gas to $30 and $40 an MCF, you destabilize the American economy. People can take advantage of that. Propaganda from other countries. I mean, on one hand, you worry about cyber stuff, but I worry about the intelligence that a lot of our opponents have that just sit back and are fueling the flames of American politicians' stupidity.
But when we have Mexico and Canada and America so oil rich, at what point do we does the practical side of us come out?
Well, it needs to come out now. I mean, that's why I think this election is so important, because what the left is trying to do with energy is make it impossible to turn us back. I mean, those coal plants that have been shut down already have been torn down. We're not keeping them alive. 23% of our electricity in the United States comes from nuclear power today. The left wants it shut down. That's a zero carbon source, and they want it shut down. I'll take them seriously when they don't say energy's CO2 is the existential threat of our time. Oh, but you can't use nuclear. Nuclear can be done completely safely. But again, what they're trying to do is take away our options so that we can't revert back.
Hopefully you have a chance to rebuke them, voters out there listening to right now, and send them a message in 2022 and then change gears in 2024. David Sokol, always great to see you, always educational, especially in these very erratic times.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it.
All right. Back in a moment. This is Brian Kilmeade Show. Bottom of the hour, Martha McCallum, and Bill Hemmer waltz in here.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Just today, President Putin has made overt nuclear threats against Europe and a reckless disregard for the responsibilities of the non-proliferation regime. Now, Russia's calling up more soldiers to join the fight, and the Kremlin is organizing a sham referendum to try to annex parts of Ukraine, an extremely significant violation of the UN Charter.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. That's the President of the United States moments ago speaking at the United Nations. But of course, he segues into climate, and I'll get into that in a moment. Martha McCallum here, fresh off her fantastic coverage of the Queen's funeral and all the everything that led to it. Martha, the president came out pretty strong against Russia, but what he just said is what's about to happen. They are going to have a phony referendum September 20th. They're going to annex about four areas of the Donbass region, and then they'll have a rationalization to defend it while calling up 300,000 reservists. Your thought about what's been taking place over the last 24 hours?
You know, I thought that the top of this speech at the UN was fairly it's what you would expect to hear. I was glad that he didn't sort of mess around talking about anything else. He addressed this at the top, which is as you would expect, and that's what everyone would want him to do. You know, the big question here is what is the capability of Russia? Because we've seen what's happened over the last 6 months, and it's been a very haphazard effort on their part. We know that they sent in all of these recruits. They were told they were in a training exercise. Next thing they know, they're trying to take Kyiv. That blew up in their faces. It went terribly wrong. So now, as we would also expect, backed into a corner and potentially losing, Putin looks like he's doubling down. He's calling in all of the people who are reservists, not regular civilians, but this is the second level that they're going to with these reservists. And talking about annexing this territory, which, as you say, would give them the right to defend it. So the question is, how capable are they of launching this kind of assault? We've been told since the beginning, well, if they really go for it and they really pull out all their guns, they're going to crush Ukraine, right? This is the moment where we're going to see, and you know, we all hope we never get to this moment, if that is the case and what that looks like, I'm afraid.
You see the video of them in prison with the Wagner group trying to swear them in. Do you want to stay in prison or do you want to go to the front lines? Yeah. Asking them. You don't do that if you're still holding an ace.
Yeah.
And number two, they've been terrible in the actual battlefield itself.
That's right.
They're great at killing innocent people without conscience and burying them in shallow graves. Yeah. That's what it is. And torturing them and blowing up infrastructure.
Well, they don't appear to have a unified sense of duty, you know, in what they're doing.
They don't know
what
the hell they're
doing. And they have friends and brothers and family members who live over the line in Ukraine. It's very difficult to, you know, to turn them against them.
Your archenemy, Bill Hemmer, will join us next.
Looking forward to it.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So let this be the moment we find within ourselves the will to turn back the tide of climate devastation, and unlock a resilient, sustainable, clean energy economy to preserve our planet.
Perfect time. Really, this is the perfect time. That's a little of the president's remarks. It's still going on at the United Nations. They got started almost I don't know, 45 minutes late. Bill Hemmer's here on time. Yeah. Martha McCallum actually got here early. She says, "Let me give me have one segment without Bill Hemmer." I said, "Come on in, Martha." Oh, didn't that wasn't the plan? But
I just kind of barged in and I love your other segment.
I didn't know Martha was going to be back today. I thought you just needed someone to fill in.
No, we have both of you
welcome
together.
Home.
This is a reunion.
I was going to take
home,
the day off.
Didn't
but
you
then
do a great job, Bill?
She was outstanding in London. 12 days of work. Is that right?
We were there about 12 days, yeah.
But for you,
we had one day off.
It was a job of joy, right?
Well, it was. You know what? It was a story that I always eventually wanted to cover. Mm. I never really wanted it to happen because I just grew up in a world where, you know, Queen Elizabeth was sort of in the backdrop of everyone's lives and the whole global scene for all of those decades. But it was an extraordinary story to cover, and it was great to be there. It was an absolutely magnificent ceremony. And, you know, I think that the reason everyone's so attracted to her is just her ethos and her sort of selflessness. You know, she's not a perfect person. There were ups and downs, but we don't have a lot of people who operate in that kind of way outside of the great members of our military who put our country before themselves. It's not something you see in sort of everyday behavior all that much anymore. So I think that's why there's sort of a nostalgia for the way that she lived her life. And I don't know if we're ever going to see that kind of thing again.
Well,
really.
Maybe if Meghan ever, will she ever be queen? I think that'll happen.
No.
She asked for it. Bill, you were talking about this before. She's asked for a one-on-one with the king.
Yes, she
what
did.
What is she at? Are they embarrassed by this whole thing? Don't you think they got
to
be embarrassed?
She just needs to go back to California. I mean, I guess there's...
But it's never going away.
Well, it could if they did what they want. What they said they wanted to do, which was to leave and go live a private life. But it turns out that they don't really want that. They want to keep coming back. And now she's asking for one-on-one meetings. You know, I think that kind of thing would work the other way around. If the king said, you know, I'd love to spend some time with the two of you before you leave. It's usually the way that works. I doubt that she's going to get the meeting that she wants. Apparently, Harry also suggested a mediator come in.
A mediator.
And help the family, to which, you know, one a bit of reporting said that Camilla laughed out loud in her tea and said, no, I think we'll work on this ourselves.
Wow. Yeah.
That's in Vanity Fair today by Katie Nichols. So,
that's some good juice.
Yeah.
Did you guys have that the other day?
No, that's
imagine me.
Wow.
So we'll see. You know, and the other thing that I just would mention, I know we have a lot to talk about, but I would just mention that, you know, the fact that it came out that Harry was very upset that they took the Elizabeth Regent off of his uniform tells you really all you need to know. Because if he got there and he put his uniform on and he saw it, he had two choices. One is just to suck it up, be glad that he got to wear his uniform and walk in there mention it again. Right. Let someone else pick it out. Instead, he said he was humiliated, almost didn't wear it, thought about putting his suit on instead. He keeps me. It's all about him. You know, it's all about the two of them. It's very, they don't need them. They're not barely in the line of succession at this point. So,
even know if we should even believe that story. Like, how would that story get out there?
You know, there's all these competing factions at the PR people on the Wales side and the Sussex side, and they always, you know, sort of try to make sure that the other side is in check. So
can I just say this?
Yes, Brian.
J.R. Moringer, who wrote The Tender Bar, J.R. Moringer, who did Shoe Dog, the Phil Knight book, who did the Agassi book. He's an unbelievable biographer. He did Harry's book. And I heard even before... You know, when this right before the Oprah interview, oh, he's doing a book. Whatever happened in Oprah, it's going to be four times as explosive. And by the way, he won't do a book that's okay. He does books that are explosive.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't picture them destroying the book. But if he wasn't writing a book, I could see this whole thing gradually getting better. You're the expert. But the book is going to be, if you thought the Oprah interview was explosive, this is going to be out of control.
You know, Meghan has said, you know, I know a lot and I'm going to keep talking about it until I'm done.
Oh, really?
Now, whether or not...
Is that in the podcast?
One of the things that I think you'll see is whether or not this experience this week changed any of that. But it doesn't feel like it did. There was so much tension. I thought William looked absolutely, you know, just stone-faced the entire time. Obviously, it's a funeral. It's a somber event. But it looked painful for him. And I don't know if it was just because of the tension with his brother or because he now realizes that he's one breath away from being king himself for the first time in his life. I think all of that probably was weighing on him quite heavily. But, you know, the Harry and Meghan thing is a distraction that none of them need. If they want to live a private life, they should go do it. If he wants to get back in the family, he needs to shelve the book. So that's the choice they have.
Right.
They're going to eventually run out of juice and stories to tell people, and then no one's going to care anymore.
Right.
And they'll get invited to a bunch of dinner parties in California for the rest of their lives, and that'll be that.
Right.
I thought it was so cool how their kids were like talking to each other.
Wasn't that cute? Yeah, I know.
Now we have to do this next.
You can see her, the big sister saying, you know, or the little sister, but that's the way sisters are, you know, saying, you know, George, you have to bow your head. Uh-huh. You know, like, put your hands together.
Right. Oh, okay.
I love there's one video of the two of them looking like this. Either side, they see everyone bowing on either side, and then they just quickly curtsy.
That was a cool, tender, real moment. Yeah. Now, Brian, is this your show?
Hi, Brian's show.
So this is great. I know that's the part. I think that, you know, when you're on for 12 straight days, Martha, we can't pretend like you weren't just covering the biggest story in the world.
But as we do in this business, now it's over and we're moving on.
Which is why you're here.
Which
one
is why
day.
We're here.
You
we
had
love
one
it.
Day off.
Exactly.
And that was
There's
travel.
A lot going on today.
So here's a little bit more. So, Eric, what do we have now that we missed? We know we talked about Russia. We know we talked about climate change. First off, your reflection on climate change. I knew it was going to be in the speech. But my goodness, in a time in which natural gas is being shut off to Europe and energy should never be used as a weapon, that's not enough.
Well, I mean,
that's the number one story. A solar panel and windmills are going to work.
It goes deep on his list of priorities. I think the reality check that must be made at the United Nations of all places, which we can debate whether or not this meeting is even necessary anymore and how much relevance it has. China's listening. China's going to have five times the coal plants we have in the United States by the year 2025.
Right.
Do they care? Do they give a damn?
They don't have to do anything until 2035.
Do you think Putin's even thinking about this? I don't.
No. So what are we doing? Listen to John Kerry? John Kerry's controlling our country?
Yes.
Yeah, India, who, by the way, is buying all the oil from Russia, allowing them to finance, along with China, this whole war effort, along with the European Union.
Brian, I just think the events overnight that we woke up to this morning out of Moscow.
Nuclear war.
That's right. That's the story for the next 6 months or the next year
or
however
long it goes. But no one wants to talk about Ukraine anymore, guys. I'm fascinated by this war, the fact that I'm pure drive alone. We're in a technological age where we thought that emotion and morale wouldn't matter. It still matters, as well as getting weaponry and organization. Can you believe a standing army the size of Russia's has no commanders, lieutenants and captains that know how to run things, that has no generals that are actually competent? Have they been even practicing with their stuff? Did Gorbachev leave the directions out for his tanks?
It's a completely inefficient society. Communism does not work well. I mean, I remember seeing it back there in the 80s. And after the Cold War ended, it turned out that a lot of the things that we thought they had were rusted, had been in old silos for a long time, that the way that they talked about their capability was very different than what actually existed. And we're seeing it play out again in real time. They haven't fixed it. They have a leader who's full of bravado, but they don't have the system to back it up.
Down.
People don't care about their country when you live in communism. It's a different – they just don't.
It's the first time Vladimir Putin's been cut down. Because for the longest time, wow, look what he did over in Syria. Look what he's threatening to do his neighbors. He took Crimea and Georgia without much of a problem. Look out. He's warning Ukraine. He's messing with everyone's elections. Well, now he's been exposed. He got into the octagon, and he's getting his ass kicked. Here's more from what the president's remarks about Russia is.
A brutal, needless war. A war chosen by one man, to be very blunt.
It's a lawsuit against Trump.
Let us speak plainly. A permanent member of the United Nations Security Council invaded its neighbor, attempted to erase a sovereign state from the map. Russia has shamelessly violated the core tenets of the United Nations Charter. No more important than the clear prohibition against countries taking the territory of their neighbor by force.
We got the theme. So we brought up Russia, and not many people are going to push back except China and India. And now, I guess just China.
I just think, well, China did say, bring the temperature down immediately after Putin talked earlier today.
And he admitted it.
And apparently Turkey and Erdogan said in the last 24 hours that Putin has to give up Crimea. You know, the Turks have a long history with that peninsula. I think we have to be honest
Can
with
I
ourselves.
Add something here? Senator Lindsey Graham sat in Martha's seat yesterday, said he spent an hour with Erdogan, and Erdogan believes the war has totally turned towards Ukraine's way, and the success is just starting.
There's only one reason it got there, and that's because of our weapons and the weapons on behalf of NATO, and we can debate as to whether or not the Europeans are stepping up the plate the way they can possibly do
it. The answer is no, it's not a debate.
Okay, well, the HIMAR rockets that we gave, HIMAR, I believe turn the course of this war.
I agree.
These are highly mobile rockets that can move all over the country, and they've got a range of 50 miles. The Ukrainians had no chance of reaching these ammo depots in Crimea without our rockets, period, full stop. Let's be honest. We are at war with Russia, whether we want to admit it or not.
But just remember that early on, we were very hesitant to send them anything that would go over the line into Russia. It was all about defensive weapons, and we were going to fight, you know, we were going to help them fight anything that came into Ukraine. So imagine if we had sent those HIMARS right off the bat.
Absolutely.
And they had been able to take out some of those depots. Think about how many people would still be alive if we had made that decision earlier. I agree with you. That was the game-changing defensive weapon, if indeed the game has changed and Erdogan is right. But it could have come sooner.
Right. And by the way, if
could
we got
have been
an
there before it started.
Right. Could have been before it started. So here is the president on Iran.
And while the United States is prepared for a mutual return to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, if Iran steps up to its obligations, the United States is clear. We will not allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon.
Okay. Yeah. That's the right thing
to say. I continue
to
believe.
Right.
It's the right thing to say.
But he's got to walk away from that deal. He should have announced it already. It's a deal that Iran is crazy not to take.
As long as he is in office, they will continue to pursue it, period. I don't know if it will get done or not, but they'll go for it.
A lot of that is just turning around everything that Trump did. You know, I think that's just their ethos. Everything is.
And Obama started it, and he never had never had Schumer support Cardin. He never had Menendez. And even in the House, they said, can you brief us on what we're evidently agreeing on? Yeah. Are you crazy?
It's a real shame when you think about elections have consequences, the route that the Trump team was on. You know, they went from outside in as opposed to inside out. It was a hell of a strategy. And it worked for a lot of these countries, Egypt, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain. They were all part of this. And Saudi Arabia was the next major domino to fall in these peace accords.
That's right. Absolutely.
And bam, the election happens. Trump's out of office. Here comes Biden. And they do a 180.
And there has to be an ability in a transition of power, which we take so much pride in doing successfully in this country, to say when you get in the door, all right, show me what's working. Show me what's not working. Right. All right. That's working. Let's leave it alone. Mm-hmm. Let's build on that, because he was all for the Abraham Accords, Joe Biden. Let's build on that. Let's leave this, you know, Iran. OK, we didn't want them to scrap that deal, but they did it. So where are we? You know, where are we? Has this held them back, or are they ramping things up? And would it make any difference if we? But it's all about optics. It's all about sending money places and then not following where it goes and seeing what happens. And the optic of saying we went back, you know, we undid what he did. Mm-hmm.
Martha, when we come back, Letitia James is having a press conference right now. They're filing a civil suit against the Trump Organization. They know they went ahead and deposed everybody. This is not a surprise, and it looks like a political play. The world does not need, in New York, with all our problems, Donald Trump is not the problem in New York. You have plenty of things to do. How about keeping somebody in jail? Martha McKellum will also tell Bill and I, and if the mics are on, the whole country, who's going to be on her show at 3 o'clock. Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So we have not told you this yet. New York Attorney General is suing Donald Trump, civil suit, saying he inflated the value of his property along with his three kids. Ivanka, I think Barron is probably not included in this. Eric Don Jr. And this is unbelievable. Oh, so once we get a hold of that real estate investor that's inflating the value of a property to get loans, then New York will be straightened out. That and the sucker punch guy in jail. Those are the two things I got to worry about. And if we could just take that skating rink away and the golf course, get it in somebody else's hands. Meanwhile, the President of the United States just accused Russia of an extremely significant violation of the International Charter and the UN. He also said that he does not seek a Cold War for China. Martha McCallum's here. Bill Hemmer's here.
Big stuff.
Bill, before I went to break, I promised my audience I'd find out what's on Martha's show at 3. Do you mind if we just go into listening mode?
No, I was just saying, I'll be the hatchet man. I'll go serve my 18 hours, and I'll come back and just...
Right. The hatchet man at the McDonald's. Right. Why not?
The hell was
put it this way. If you try to pick up the person behind the counter at 2:30 in the morning, and she says, no, what choice do you have? I mean, you might as well go to my backpack for a hatchet.
Oh, my God. That was the scariest video. Good God. So Ned Price is going to join us. He's at the UN with the president. So we'll talk to him about what the president had to say today about this very unnerving threat from Russia. Putin saying it's not a bluff. in terms of talking about his own nuclear capabilities and the, you know, incredible technology that he says he has.
He says it's an
answer
to
all the allies. Exactly. And it's better an answer than to NATO us, to the provocation of the allies. So we're going to talk to Ned Price. I also want to talk to him, you know, about some of the other things that are going on in the world. So we'll save that for when we actually have our discussion. Brett Vilakovich is on the ground in Ukraine. We're going to talk to him about what he's seeing in terms of the battle there. Firsthand. So I'm looking forward to talking to him as well. And Geraldo's going to join us to talk about the airlift project of migrants to Martha's Vineyard who've now been sent to Cape Cod. I mean, this story is just so incredible to me. I can't understand why these same people weren't calling it inhumane and evil when planes were sent to upstate New York to red districts. They didn't say anything. Poor Rob Astorino was like, what's going on? No one told me a plane was coming. And they were like, you're just going to have to suck it up, Rob. You know, that this is the way it is. Everyone's sharing the burden. And then suddenly, I mean, it's the hypocrisy is so incredibly.
Right.
It's so unbelievably
clear.
I just can't even believe people can argue this.
There was a drop off in New Jersey too, right? I do believe, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think
was
so.
There?
Wasn't there? Didn't a plane or a bus show up in New Jersey?
Well, been,
I mean, 3 months ago, I'm talking
they've
about.
They've gone everywhere. Oh, absolutely. Listen, they've been everywhere.
Here's Teterboro. The point. This network has been on the border every day for than a year and a half. And there are often times when we speak with our correspondents and say, who else is there? And they say, you can drive for hours and not see another TV crew. But son of a gun, as soon as that plane landed, touched down on Martha's Vineyard, those guys beat a line out of New York. First flight into Martha's
Vineyard.
Genius,
right? DeSantis is a genius.
And
Abbott started it.
The only thing people on the island said was, you gave us no warning. And I think after about 16 hours of people saying, you gave us no warning, I think the people looked at the screen.
That's the same thing that
everybody said. But they looked at the screen. They said, this is absurd. We can't be reporting it this way. And then a day later is when they put him on the bus to the ferry to take him to the naval base on Cape Cod.
Real quick, Trace Gallagher is the new host of Fox News at Night for Shannon Bream.
Yay.
Bill Hemmer, your first reaction. Martha McCallum, you in support?
Fantastic. Yep.
Trace is an awesome, awesome reporter, great anchor, and it's a great position for all of us to have him in. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, there's nothing he can't do.
Absolutely.
Oh, he's been absolutely. A great colleague and a great guy,
yeah,
and I'm happy for him and his family.
Right.
Well
too.
Done.
And I'm happy for him, too. I'd like to come out against it to create a better show, but I'm fully in support. Thanks, guys. Martha, we'll watch you at 3. Bill, we'll watch you wherever
you
are.
Thank you, Brian.
You
great
it,
to
brother.
See you.
Keep it here. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.